Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
My name is Aram, and my pronouns are he, him. I'm the producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
My name is Dylan. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm a physicist in Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring the Medusa.
The Monster Manual describes Medusa as a victim of a terrible curse. The serpent-haired Medusa petrifies all those who gaze upon it, turning creatures into stone monuments to its corruption.
We are joined by Nikki. Nikki is an educator, streamer, and LGBTQ+ and disability advocate. She's also the producer at TTTRPG, a Twitch channel dedicated to creating a fun and safe place for marginalized members of the TTRPG community to connect and play games together. You can follow her on Twitter at @halfling_Nikki or TikTok and Instagram at the same name. Welcome to the show, Nikki.
Thank you for the welcome.
So, the Medusa. A Medusa. The Medusa. This is where I'm already confused.
We'll talk about it later, but they specifically use the word in the book. Plural is Medusas, and we can talk about why that's broken later.
Yes. Thank you.
Before we talk about why it's broken, Nikki, what is a Medusa to you?
To me and to many other women, a Medusa is a symbol of feminist rage. A lot of women will get Medusa tattoos after a sexual assault. In the specific lore that I'm thinking of, Medusa is raped by Zeus and in Athena's temple, and Athena gets angry. And there's a feminist slant on the lore that says that she made her ugly as a protection and gave her special powers as a way to protect herself against people like Zeus, who will take advantage of women. And I prefer that lore over the Monster Manual's lore for a lot of reasons. As a conventionally attractive woman, I've had to deal with a lot of unwanted attention. And sometimes you wish you could turn men into stone. That would be really cool.
There'd be so many statues.
Right? Exactly.
Cities would be filled with statues.
I would just go on a rampage.
Right. And rightfully so.
I'm like, oh, evangelical preacher, statue.
It'd be an incredibly pleasant city, just jack filled with statues.
Like, why do you have all these statues of terrible men?
Yeah. Why did you honor all these just random dudes?
It's a reminder to all the other men not to cross me.
I keep gendering the Medusa as female because I do respect the fact that Wizards said they could be male or female because they're a race, but also, like, making them male seems to, like, as you're saying, it undercuts the whole point of why a Medusa exists. Like, I think in this particular case, you want this creature to be female because it's so important in understanding their origin and their motivations.
Well, even the incubus and succubus, they have double art.
Right. They have male and female art. The Medusa does not. I wish it did. It'd be hot.
We talked about this in the context of the hag where Crawford got the question of, can hags be male? And his response is, oh yeah, you know, I had a non-binary hag in my game, except all of the art, all of the writing,
all the terminology is mothers and grandmothers. Mm-hmm.
They've, like, they're pulled not away from it. Guys, they've done better in the Medusa in that they specifically use, you know, gender neutral pronouns, and they call out that it could be men and women.
I fixed a sexism by saying it's men and women.
Yeah. We, of course, go back to classical beauty because the whole thing is eternal youth, beauty, and adoration. But you don't have to necessarily be Greek statue beautiful to turn into a Medusa. You just have to find yourself beautiful and be vain.
And it's interesting because it talks about how their vanity and their hubris and, like, how they use that power to hurt people. And that just doesn't sit right with me because, like, the idea that beautiful people are mean is weird.
Yeah.
I have a lot of very, very pretty friends.
Right? I know. I was like, all my friends are hot.
If that's how this worked, there'd be a lot of Medusa twinks. Right? Is all I'm saying. There'd be a whole bunch of them.
The Medusa gym. It's just lifting statues.
All these buff Medusa boys.
Big Medusa ladies.
A bunch of Medusa in 4-inch shorts.
Like, what? How would this art be different if it was made by queer women instead of men? Because, like, she'd be large. She'd be like Scorpia with snake hair.
Very, very short snakes.
Definitely a shaved undercut snake.
Oh my God, I can picture this now. I need to go commission some art.
So Medusa being a punished creature is apparently actually really recent. I'd have to double check if it was, I think it was like 400-ish BCE. Ovid did that, dickhead.
At least Wizards didn't this time. At least this time.
Yeah, at least it wasn't Watsy this time.
They didn't take the lore and make
around
it worse. They just took what was there. So I'll give them credit. Maybe even a little better with allowing for male and female Medusa. Maybe in this one case, Wizards did a better job.
We'll get to it because all they had to do was look at the original mythos because Medusa is one of the three sisters that are Gorgons, and Gorgons are the species that just does this. She had wings, she had snake hair, and she just hated. It specifically says she hates men, but you would have to look at, like, a translation to figure if this is like a mankind thing or a actual gendered thing. Mm-hmm. And then it was Ovid who took this story where, you know, as with all myths involving this stuff, you get into the, like, was it she's punished because consensual sex with Zeus and Athena can only punish, you know, one party, because how do you punish Zeus? Was it a rape and a punishment? Because that actually does happen a lot in Greek mythology, punishing the victims of Zeus
and in our culture in general. Yeah,
victim blaming is, it is not something that ever went away. And then, like, the last option, the retelling of it where you make it broken form of protection is at least, like you said, it's a nice twist on it, but it leaves a lot of the toxicity intact, where the thing we have to do now is punish women and give them some form of power because you can't stop men.
Yeah, I like the giving him powers. I really don't like making him ugly. That just feels awful.
I also don't think she's ugly. Like,
right, that's the other thing. She's hot as hell.
Call me a monster fucker, but I don't think she's ugly.
Like, if your end problem is they have a goofy ass haircut, they're still hot.
Yeah, every single Medusa is always presented as voluptuous and gorgeous. So I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
It's always fun, like, when you see a Medusa and, like, all the snakes have their own personality. That's always my favorite.
Well, I never, snakes never bothered me, so.
The turning to stone thing bothers me a little bit, but also, you know.
That's hard.
She can wear a blindfold. It's fine. Yeah. I'll still make out with Medusa.
Just go towards the hissing. You'll figure it out.
I'll let her come to me. How about?
What do you think a Medusa's motivation should be? How would you see a Medusa in a game?
If I was going to have a Medusa, she'd be there being hunted by the players because some powerful man in town wants her gone because she keeps taking out his allies and abusive men in power and all these things. She'd be like a vigilante in my games. And then it would provide that like moral gray area of my players needing to decide, like, are we going to take the money to end this Medusa's life, or are we just going to leave town because she's fine, like she's doing the right thing.
I really do like when you clearly are sent somewhere by someone evil. You don't know it right away, but you figure it out mid-mission. And so you have to change gears. It is fun to pull the rug out under your players that way and to have a monster that is capable of creating that gray area just by existing. Just kind of their existence creates that gray space. Because if they want to be, Medusa can be terrifying.
Oh, God, yes.
Just they can just wreck a party.
A woman scorned can be quite terrifying.
Especially if she got powers and like a 16 yeah. strength. Yeah, she can be very yeah. terrifying. Oh, no, only a 10 strength.
Petrifying gaze is one of the scariest abilities in D&D. If you start your turn and you can see them within 30 feet, the Medusa can force you to make a save. It isn't a reaction. It's just, did you start your turn nearby? Done.
No action on their part. Just, can you see them? That is a terrifying trigger.
Not to mention the fact that it has the auto-fail case, where like, or not auto-fail, I guess auto-death case. If you fail your saving throw, it's a DC 14, save by 5 or more, you are immediately fully petrified.
They don't do a lot of that little extra math in D&D, where it's like, if you fail by 5, if you succeed mm-hmm. by 5. They don't mm-hmm. do that a lot in 5e. They've kind of tried to excise that completely, but they made sure it was here, and I like it because it really does make the monster much more terrifying.
And I want her to be terrifying.
She should be. She should be frightening. She should put the fear of God into men. That is what she should do.
Yes, exactly.
No, I just find it odd that it's not like a clock effect.
You'd hit and like you slowly turn.
Yeah, I would treat the petrifying gaze as like you make it an aura thing. Like, if you're in this area, it is assumed that you're going to catch glimpses of them, and then you almost do, like, levels of exhaustion as you are slowly turned to stone when you don't make your save. Because as it stands, the fact that it can be instantaneous, and it's one of those things that obviously favors high con characters, but if you're a wizard, and Medusa charges you, you lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're done.
Failing a DC 14 con save if you don't have proficiency in constitution is not just easy, it's probable. And even then, failing by 5 or more is, if you have a +1 constitution, like 40% chance that you just immediately turn to stone. That's, to me, too much to function as an encounter.
If your players are there, okay, Medusas don't come for people. Okay, they don't. Like, unless you're a really bad person, they're probably not going to come for you. Even if they're a mean mm-hmm. Medusa, they're not going to. Turning you into stone doesn't give them anything, except maybe they like doing it. That's it. It's like a bonus. They're not going to hunt you down to turn you into stone. So if you are facing one, you've put yourself there. And if you've come to a fight a Medusa with no way to magically switch yourself back to stone or defend yourself or not look, if you're not prepped, that's you.
This is a thing D&D has a bad tendency to do, where you create a power or a protection that is binary. It's on or off. If you know not to look at it, if you know it's a Medusa and they don't get a surprise round, then at the start of your turn, you just say, and I don't look directly at it. And then I take my turn. And it means that for all your melee characters, anyone making attack rolls, they have disadvantage on their attack rolls, which makes the fight a little bit more difficult. But that's it. It's just every turn you're trying to play DM gotcha with, you didn't say it this turn, I can't save. And that sucks. That's terrible.
Or there's a reflective surface.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is you can negate the fight, is what I'm getting at. Whereas if you create sort of an aura effect, and it's one of those, like, if you're within the aura, then you have to make, like, 5 saves, and it's going to make your life harder. Then it's, if you find a way around it, that's great. And if you don't, the fight is still tenable.
Yeah, but also you've now made a situation where after 5 rounds, the whole party turns into stone, right?
You make it a save per round. You make, like I said, everyone now has a clock. It's like I said, levels of exhaustion.
The melee fighters have to step out of that aura.
I think that's fine as long as she still has a standard action where she could focus the gaze.
Absolutely. Or even like make it a lair action instead.
That'd be great. A lair action would make a lot of sense.
Especially because, like you said, a Medusa, they're always framed as being in one location surrounded by these statues, which... how is that not a lair? How is that not a terrifying lair?
Well, especially when they talk about like where she lives. She lives in ruins and all these things. She's in quiet exile. And so I think, but like you said, like she's not going out to find people. So I think like it has to be a lair, right? And it should be obvious that you're walking into a scary situation. If my players go out of their way to go into a scary situation and they're unprepared, I will roll in front of them and decide whether or not they're going to die. Like, I'll say, okay, like if I roll under 10.
You don't try to punish players, but if they make conscious choices that are dangerous, like, dude, consequences on you.
And I've only ever killed one player character before, like permanently. And it was because he was a level 1 and ran into a bandit camp of level 5 bandits and then... And I said, are you sure you want to do that? These people will kill you. They killed your friend. They're going to kill you. And he was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to save everyone else and distract them. I'm like, all right, good luck.
Noble. Yeah, but with consequences.
Exactly. And it gave them something to fight for, because then once they leveled up, they went back to that bandit camp and took their revenge after their friend died. But
yeah, it becomes a narrative thing.
Right. It's a story element now.
It's a big enough deal to warrant killing a player over. Like, you don't drop them on goblins, but when it's like, no, I'm going back in, you'll probably die, I'm saving my friend,
that's a worthy death. That is a good character death. And if, as long as everyone's on board going in, that's what happens sometimes. I do like the idea though of like getting caught off guard and now having like a 180-pound statue that you gotta drag
to a cleric
back home somehow. Right, exactly.
It is the size of a person. That means it's super not 180 pounds.
Right. It's like 600 or 700 pounds, is it? You're right.
This is like, this isn't, the fighter isn't dragging this back. This is a full blown, we have to get a wagon into the middle of these ruins and somehow it is nearly, and to get them back undamaged, like
get a winch.
This is a huge deal to get them out. Greater restoration is.
Need a couple war horses.
That's fun. That's a fun adventure. It's a bummer that one guy sidelined. You had to find him an NPC or something for a while, but that's a fun adventure. That's a fun consequence.
Greater restoration is a 5th level spell, which means you don't get it until 11th level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a challenge 6 monster. So as much as it is easy to fix in that all you have to do is cast Greater Restoration, the party doesn't have it.
Right.
Which means you have to get them the scrolls ahead of time, and you have to hopefully, like I said, it's the only way to fight this is to completely cancel it out by giving the party, you know, 5 scrolls of Greater Restoration. Make sure that the person who can use spell scrolls hasn't turned to stone.
Right.
Yep. Don't want them to get zapped first.
Wizard goes down first. Entire party's out.
Holding in their hands.
And even then, unless you're wildly overloading them on greater restoration scrolls, they can only be used at the end of combat.
Right.
Because if you only have five and you turn the ranger back and then the ranger is petrified again, maybe we don't have enough. Someone's going to remain stone, and now we have to sort out, as you know, a level six party who doesn't have access to good teleports yet, getting this person back to town to get them treated.
Well, I think like my strategy, if I were playing, would be to, you know, we're going to blindfold the wizard, give the wizard the scrolls. We're going to blindfold the wizard. They're just going to stand there and do magic missile. That's it. That's all they're doing. They're just going to stand in one spot and make sure they don't get petrified. That's I think what I would do as a player.
You've got to come up with like maybe also cast mirror image. Mm-hmm. So they might pick a different one than you. Like there's a bunch of things you'd have to do. Maybe like, you know, cast darkness and then blind sight. Like there's a whole bunch of tactics you could pull.
Each dart hits a creature of your choice that you can see within range. Magic missile can't work blindfolded.
Oh, you have to be able to see her.
Bummer.
This is the problem, is almost all of D&D's spells, like unless you're going to shoot fireballs beside the Medusa, there are line of sight rules, which means now you have to have a wizard who has been given blind sight. And again, you're creating a bunch of ways where the only way to defeat the challenge is to negate the challenge.
Right.
Right.
This is my major complaint.
More than likely, no one's going to be surprised by a Medusa. So you've planned for it. So therefore, this ability it has, while interesting, because it's negated,
doesn't work.
It doesn't really work. I see it. Yeah, no, I get that. I still think there's ways to make it very frightening, but I do think that the power should just back a Medusa up as more of an NPC, as more of a character where it's like there might be a fight, but it's more like a scuffle and then a negotiation. Like, that's kind of how I see a Medusa.
Nikki, is Medusa a monster?
Depends on who you ask.
Sure, but I'm asking you.
No. I think there's a reason that to a lot of women, she is a hero and not a monster. And I think that there's a lot of female monsters that are very scary. And it's because who's writing these books? A bunch of men.
We just did the Dryad episode, and the Dryad is just a pretty lady in a tree. But then it's written all of this misogyny, like they trick men into bringing them the whole point where they trick men into bringing them presents. Like, oh, how specific was that? Someone clearly wrote in their own bullshit into this character.
I gave her the presents. Why won't she touch me? I gave her the things.
Yeah. Well, if you won't accept the present, you can be a tree.
Right.
What? It's so weird.
As a woman into geeky shit, like that was my life, right? Like I got you this thing, and here, like, come hang out with us. And then I would realize, like, oh, they're trying to date me, and like they're not trying to involve me in this game that they're playing. Which is why it took me so long to even get into tabletop role playing games, was because I wasn't welcome in the way that would make me feel welcome. So Medusa, I think, is a monster for those specific men, the ones that have been rejected or have been accused of things, or who are afraid of the wrath of angry women. But then for women, she's that vigilante that's going around and destroying powerful abusers. I think she's a symbol for a lot of people, for sure.
She's a monster for monsters.
Exactly.
Especially for fully, like, sapient monsters. I think that's the major delineator, is what I always talk about is willful maliciousness. And that's sort of where the line gets blurry with Medusa, is there's, in the myth, there is a hatred. And you can argue in circles whether it's validated or not, but there is a certain level of maliciousness to it. And then it just comes down to that internal morality, right? Is this a monster because that is cruelty, or is that valid and justice? And I love that space. I think it's far more interesting than like a vampire, because there your question is like, if they have to kill to survive, is killing more ethical?
A Medusa is not turning people into stone to feed.
No.
It's a defensive tactic. If it is an offensive tactic, if they choose to use it offensively, then they're probably a little monstrous.
And then it comes down to the question of who are you using it on?
Are you punching up or are you punching down?
Mm-hmm.
Which way are you using that power? That, I think, is one of the key things that would determine if any creature was a monster. If the monster is aware of themselves, aware of their abilities, aware of the damage they can do, aware of people and language, which this one is, if it then chooses to use the power offensively just to harm people, probably a monster. Just defensively, they're just protecting their home.
Yeah.
Get out of their home.
Right. Like, why are you here? That just gave me an idea when you were like, if they know. And I was like, oh my God. A himbo monster doesn't know their own power.
Oh, a himbo Medusa that doesn't know? Oh, no.
Man, I don't know why that people keep turning into statues around me. I must be too beautiful. Like, I don't know. I don't understand.
Just so sad. I don't know, this thing's going around where everyone turns into statues?
I keep trying to make friends, and I can't.
I guess I'm immune. Maybe they can do some tests on me?
Why are you guys screaming?
See, this is the problem, because the reason they bring up mirrors in the Monster Manual is that Medusa is subject to her own curse.
Right.
So one of the things they say is, in a Medusa's lair, they will go around and smash every present mirror. If you have a himbo Medusa, what you have is a Medusa statue.
That's true. They'd never make it.
2-3 days max.
That's a good point.
Even if they didn't smash a mirror or see like a reflective goblet, they're going to just look in the stream.
Yeah, we're going to get full Narcissus.
It would be a very difficult thing to never see your own reflection.
Another argument for making it something that progresses and something that wears off as well. Like,
if they are empty head, vibes only, and also vain, they're not going to be empty headed for very long. They're going to be stone headed. So,
if Dylan's right, though, if we're using the slow Medusa, the gradual change, right, they wouldn't be able to accidentally turn themselves.
No, you'd be able to notice.
Well, there could be these very tragic stories about a Medusa that just didn't wish to be here anymore. So just looked in a mirror and sat there and waited as they slowly turned to stone. Yeah, that's how they decide to go. Sits in front of a mirror and just starts combing their snake hair very calmly until that's the last one and they're frozen.
Poor snakes. They don't deserve that.
Always the big question is, how much brain does each snake have? Nikki, how would you change the Medusa in 5th edition?
Mostly just the lore is the part that bothers me. I don't know. I think I just would take it closer to the Greek mythology lore if I was writing the Medusa. And then I do like your idea about the aura and the time of being within her presence. Like, we're talking about, like, Medusa could turn herself and how lonely that would be. Isolation can really do something to people. Can she hang out with other Medusas without it being a problem? Because there's a really powerful community in sisterhood.
I do like that they put in that a Medusa can force a creature to make the constitution save. And all they had to do was play off of that in the lore, and you create a very different creature. Like, don't smash the mirrors. Leave lots of, you know, reflective things around, because you're never going to force that on yourself. I know that what they're probably going for, because they can see when a creature can see the Medusa's eyes, starts its turn. So it becomes one of those forced eye contact things. You can look at your own reflection and not look yourself in the eyes. Trust me, I know. I never look myself in the eyes. So I'm ashamed of who I am.
I'm also ashamed of who you are, if that helps.
Yeah. Well, part of it is the fact that I keep talking to you. All you have to do is make it an active exertion of will. And now Medusa, you can stand there and have a conversation with a Medusa. And it's an active choice. Like, no, I'm petrifying this person.
Can you imagine, like, a date with a Medusa? And then you say, the date starts to go south. And she's just like, all right, I'm done with this.
What's your favorite movie? Oh, it's Fight Club.
Con save.
A Medusa in, like, you know, again, old stone ruins, creepy. A Medusa in a house of mirrors.
She's scary.
Terrifying. Utterly terrifying, because you'll never know where she is. And her, and assumedly, any one of her reflections, you'd see her eyes.
Carnival dungeon.
Carnival dungeon.
You get greeted by a creepy clown. House of Mirrors has a Medusa in it.
Give her a grapple attack. And you give her a, like, the full turn action is if you can make someone look at you, force them to make the save. I want a Medusa that's going full melee, getting in there, grabbing you. It's got, like, poison attacks from the hair, holding you in there, and then just pulling your face around.
Oh, scary.
What if there were different types of Medusa that had different snakes? So you could get a grappling one that had boas, right? These just giant, long, thick boas. And then you'd get the poisonous ones that had vipers, yes. Right? And then maybe there's a really nice one with, like, garter snakes. It's like, yeah. Hi, I'm Medusa.
If you ignore the gross sexual assault backstory because Ovid's a weird creep and just go back to the Gorgons were just spawned of a god of the sea and, you know, some other mythological figure, depends. We have Medusa, we have Uriel. Her thing was just, she's noted for her bellowing cries, particularly in the tale of Medusa's death at Perseus's hands, in which her anguished howls could make stone crumble to sand.
Wow.
That immediately becomes, like, you give her an ability where the petrification is only ever partial, but now it makes you vulnerable to this weird sonic attack.
Shatter. You put him in as a team.
Yeah.
Make a little Medusa superhero team.
This one turns you into stone. This one, your limbs just start turning into sand. And now you're, how are you going to fight? You can't use your weapons.
This one turns you to stone. This one pulverizes you. That would be a great 1-2 hit. Who's the third one? What can the third one do?
Steno tends to be depicted as a thin Gorgon monster with red snakes curling around her head instead of hair. In earlier accounts, she had a scaly head, boar's tusks, bronzed hands, and a protruding tongue, glaring eyes, and a snake around the waist as a belt.
Neat.
They don't give her any, like, oh, and then she did this. Basically, the two sisters, after Medusa was killed, went after Perseus, and he had a cap of invisibility. Legitimately, he had Hades' hat, and when he put it on, he turned invisible, so the angry Gorgons could not find him. Also, for some reason, Medusa is mortal and the two sisters aren't. Depending on what version of immortal we're dealing with, it may have straight up been Perseus cannot kill the other two. Regardless, like, if you pull back to, like, instead of doing this weird, gross curse bullshit, and you pull off of the Gorgon sisters, you get three Medusas for the price of one, you get a weird sand blast attack thingy, and you get a scary punch Medusa with metal hands.
Right.
Yes, that is cool, actually. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Can you imagine, like, you know, you go to mess with the one Medusa and then she calls in her sisters for backup? That'd be amazing.
Right? Oh, why didn't I think of that? Well, and in some Medusa lore, don't her sisters die? I thought, like, she was so lonely because, like, somebody killed her sisters.
The only thing I could see is there are versions where, basically, in the Greek myths, they're Gorgons. They're creatures that exist of their own right, and there's just the three of them, and maybe they don't live together, and then, you know, Perseus kills Medusa, blah, blah. In the Roman myths, apparently, there are some versions that just don't concern themselves with the sisters, and then there are some versions where, basically, Athena was so mad at Medusa that she also got the other two.
Right.
You sell the players on using the lair of the Medusa, like, holding up there, like, this is actually a fantastic stronghold, like, let's keep this place. And then they come back after an adventure one day, and all of the statues are reduced to dust, and there's just a note written on the ground in the sand, just, we are coming for you. Like, that's the rest of a campaign right there.
Aram, what's going on? Why is all of our stuff in boxes?
Good news, Dylan. Dead Ghost Productions is moving.
What do you mean moving?
We're separating our patrons and launching a new Dead Ghost page to provide our listeners with more content and a clean RSS feed for all their podcasts. Stacy is helping us out with the heavy stuff.
She's a bit clumsy.
Okay, so that makes sense, sort of. What about the people who have already subscribed?
I've got it handled. Everyone who is currently subscribed to our Dead Ghost Productions level or our combined feeds level will get a free month once we split the feeds on June 1st. If you're signed up for a yearly subscription, you'll get just as many free months on our new Dead Ghost feed as you currently have left on that subscription.
Okay, so what do people have to do in order to make the switch?
It's easy. Everyone will get a link to activate their free subscription sent directly to their email. They just need to follow that link to the new Dead Ghost patron and they'll be all set. The changes won't start until June 1st, and if anyone has questions about it, they can email us at killeverymonster@gmail.com or deadghostproductions@gmail.com. They can also message us directly in Patreon.
Okay. This better not interfere with my experiments, Vardian.
Don't worry, Dylan. I've told Stacy to stay clear of your laboratory. How do we safely power down the nuclear generator again?
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
So we start off in a small town. 50, 60 years ago, the town was smaller. It was built a little ways off into the woods. And eventually, news came through that a road was being built up. It couldn't cut through the woods. It was closer to the edge. And essentially, everybody picked up and moved on over. And once there was transit through town, things started to build up a little more. Still not more than like a stopover, a place to rest between, you know, real cities. But now there's a population to it, a little bit of income. There are people who need things now. We're going to pan off back into the woods, back into ruins is the wrong word, the remains, the bits of
foundation that couldn't just be picked up and taken. The last few little structures that stay out there to where someone else has set up their home. Nikki, tell me about where you set up shop.
The town before had a mill. She wanted a place that people would recognize. The mill had like a really nice big window, and so she can use that for when people come to her for getting the things that they need, the medicines that they need. And then also the mill had really nice workspace and shelving and things like that. There's a bed in the corner that's clearly for like when people need to recover there. And there's shelves and there's lots of like bottles and herbs and things hanging to dry so that she can use them in potions later. Mortar and pestle, all these different things all over. Really nice shears and gardening tools and a big basket that's clearly made for collecting more materials. Very witchy. So she mixes all of her own potions to tend to people. But she's also really, really old. She's been around a really long time, longer than anyone in the town has been alive. And she's probably been in town for like the last 20 years. And so she's very well known by the people in town. And she specifically helps a lot of the women in town and people. Most of her patients are non-men, but she'll also set a bone if she needs to. So people come to her for help. Typically, she doesn't really ask for money as payment. People will bring her the things that she needs. There's like a group of women in town who just make sure that she always has the stuff that she needs, whether it's food or clean water, things like that.
Can't be weaving blankets when you're making medicines, you know?
Exactly.
Got to keep you in the base needs for survival so that you can basically be the doctor.
Right.
Setting a bone is a little bit more complicated, but if somebody cuts themselves cleaning a wound, not so bad, you know? But when you can't explain what's going on or when the problem gets complicated, they come out to the woods. Where are you at presently?
Right now, I am out with my basket. Like, there's a little stream, and I'm collecting different herbs and that I know grow along there. A lot of, like, mint and things like that that I know will help with, like, stomach issues, migraine tonics, that sort of thing. It's a nice, like, sunny day out, and I've got my headband pulled up because there's no people around. A lot of the times if people come over, they know what my hours are, that I will be home, and I will wear a blindfold and have gotten used to moving around my space with a blindfold on so I don't accidentally petrify somebody. But then there's also ways that people alert me to their presence.
So we have our incoming visitor. Aram, do you want to tell me about your hike into town, or into former town?
Gartok is a minotaur. Big minotaur. He's got those Watusi horns, those real thick ones that just go straight out. Every time he goes through a doorway, he just turns his head to the side because he has to fit through it. Big, huge shoulders, carries a giant axe. Big ring in the nose. Gartok travels, looks for people to help, charges them a fair coin. That's his job. When he strolled into the nearby town, someone offered him a gig, and he took it.
And what was that job?
Gartok doesn't ask a lot of questions. Gartok is pointed in a direction and accepts money. The richest guy in town gave him a good amount of gold to go take out some lady that is, like, stealing his kids or something. He wasn't quite sure what the whole story was about. He didn't care. He's just going to go take out this lady. I guess maybe bring a kid back if he sees one.
Standard witches, you know? So tell me what your walk has looked like. Is this just, like, is there any element of, like, hunter to this? Is this a, like, looking for the target, or is this like you were told they were in town? There's a path to go there. Let's walk on the path.
So many people have been here. Like several people in town were like, yeah, just take this road, go up here, and she's right there. So he just got his axe casually over his shoulder, strolling up the lane, maybe even whistling. Can cows whistle?
Cows can't carry axes. That's fair. Who gives a shit if they can whistle? So, Aram, I'd like you to give me, what's your passive perception? Since you're apparently not paying any attention.
13. My passive perception is 13.
Then?
I mean, I'm not expecting to be attacked. I'm walking to a hut in the woods to have a conversation.
A conversation, he says, hefting his giant fuck-off axe.
This speaks very loudly.
Also kind of loud. As you're walking, just trotting along, there's a point where you trip over something. It's basically a trip line, except it is just on the ground. The sort of thing where you step on it and it immediately just pulls a little bit, rings a bell off on the side of the road. It's fairly low pitch.
All right, he'd freeze. He'd listen.
Give me a perception roll.
12 plus 3 is 15.
Okay, so you rang that bell that was like 4 or 5 feet away from you?
Right.
You hear a bell. The one that was 4 or 5 feet away from you.
He's still, you know, casually walking up a road, but that's a little unsettling. A tripwire is always unsettling. So maybe his...
Always a little concerning.
Yeah, maybe his shoulders are now a little bit more flexed. The axe is probably off the back in one hand, and now he's proceeding forward.
Nikki, your Medusa here is based on the pitch. You know, you're a fair ways away. It was one of the lower ones so that it'll carry somebody probably about 100 meters out from the hut.
I think, like, she just continues because she knows, like, she's like, this is outside my hours. Whoever it is can wait.
I'm doing a lot of work.
Yeah, if it's an emergency, then the bells will hit faster and then she'll know that she needs to go. But if it's a non-emergency, then it'll be at a normal pace.
Okay, Aram, now that you're taking a little bit of care with it, I'd like you to roll me a perception with advantage as you kind of continue down this path.
12 plus 3 is 15. That's my high one.
Then you are maybe another 20 or so yards down the road.
Okay.
I just realized that I'm not allowed to use meters with you people, so I've switched back.
Hey, if you want us to know anything, yeah.
Listen, I've wanted you to know things this entire show, and I've never been happy. You get maybe another 20 or so yards down the path, and you're about to step down, and you notice, again, another one of these lines leading off to a bell.
And he would, like, just look at it, look down the other way. It's just a bell. And he'd squint because he's like, why would they have two? But he steps over it as gingerly as he can for a minute for a Minotaur. And now he's like, now he's got his shoulders kind of hunched and he's walking forward a little slower.
You are fully aware now. You are like actively paying attention.
Yeah.
20 yards, another bell. 20 yards, another bell. The thing you catch by bell 4 is that they are getting smaller. They're getting higher pitched.
Interesting.
Sure enough, coming out into the clearing, you've got one last one. And it basically looks like about the right size, something that you would just leave on a counter. Someone has a warning system here. You are probably just clever enough. Actually, I don't know what your character's intelligence score is.
He's got intelligence of 10. He's just as smart as I am.
Being generous today, huh? You're clever enough to basically put together, like, they're going up in pitch. They're at regular intervals. This is basically just a heads up. You would trip when you're the furthest out. A real low-pitched bell that's going to carry into the woods. And the closer you get, it'll ding higher and higher until you're, like, standing next to whoever set them up.
Right. Okay. What am I looking at?
Like I said, the temptation would be to use the word ruins. Except this is not dilapidated. It's not like it rotted. the wood, the things that could be easily stripped away. Some of the simpler sort of masonry came in bigger chunks, was easier to separate out, has just been taken. This is the floor plan of a small town. 7-8 buildings. There is one that is still particularly intact. It looks like, from the shape of it, most of a mill. Someone came in here and basically took the bits of wall that were left, built them up just high enough to get, you know, room height, and then put a decent roof on it.
Probably a lot of flowers, maybe some fresh paint. I mean, it must look cute.
There's a beehive. Like, it's a whole thing.
It feels very cottage kitchen. Like, yeah. I'm down for it.
There's a living quarters off to the side.
And there's, like, a couple of places where, again, the foundations were enough that it takes, like, minimal effort to turn it into a building. Just stuff where you can put, like, shovels and shit. Because there are small gardens here, like, real sort of subsistence stuff. And also weird stuff. Those are the two things. It's like onion, carrot, potato.
Hemlock.
That'll kill a man.
Just all in rows, right? Because she knows what they are. And I imagine some of these buildings are used as like drying huts and maybe even a tannery. Like you must be doing things in these different buildings, right? They're kind of assigned to tasks or something.
I think it would make sense that she's like she's used the foundation as little like containers for her garden because critters can be a problem. So maybe she's like gone in and put like
there's
wire
some, like
under.
Knee-high walls.
Right. Yeah. They're like giant raised flower beds now.
Yeah.
That's what you got going on here. You haven't tripped any of the other sort of proximity wires there. So you are just in town. Nikki, give me just a raw wisdom.
Oh, not 20.
It's fucking weird that never tripped again. You heard the furthest one out.
Mm-hmm.
Usually if it's like animals or something, animals are honestly fairly careful, especially over the road. They notice these things. Squirrels are at eye level with the fucking wire.
And all the people in town know to trip each one so that I know they're coming. Yeah.
So it's very, very strange for you to have heard the most distant warning and nothing else.
She would pack up her little basket and close the lid on it and then walk up to her home / workspace.
Aram, where is the first place you would go on entering into this setting?
Well, as he's walking up, he's going to at least check the other buildings before he gets to the main one. So I imagine he's just like looking around corners, nodding, and eventually making his way up.
Just give me a dexterity roll so I can decide if I'm going to make you into the butt of a joke.
That is going to be a 9 plus 1 is 10.
Nikki, as you come up, you see a door open. There is this huge hulking figure who is immediately catching rakes and shovels and like just catching them, like shit, like stuffing them back into the shed that they just threw open.
I caught my horn on something.
So the door opened, hit the horn, and that immediately made you turn. And then the other horn hit the wall. Right. And that's what knocked everything out. And then you start catching things and it's
like
just...
I'm like a one-man Three Stooges routine.
I think she would walk up and say,
if you had bothered to read the sign on my door, you would have known what my hours were.
He looks over. Beautifully hand-painted sign, right? Just gorgeous.
You can read, right?
He turns and like looks a little offended. He turns back and...
Yes, I can read. Of course I can read.
What is he looking at? Because we have at no point... given you any form of description aside from wearing a bit of a headscarf.
She's like 5 foot tall. Like, she's not a big person. Slender, fairly muscular, dark, like a grayish green skin, and then long snake hair. And they are kind of, right now they're just kind of like around, like laying there kind of calmly around her shoulders, like a scarf in a way. when she heard somebody coming and saw the large figure, she did bring her her little, like, she has a headband that she pulls down over her eyes so she doesn't accidentally petrify people. And so she's put that on as she asked this question about being able to read. And then she has a staff. She's already put her basket down because she's on a little bit on guard, having seen the big fuck off axe. And so she's got this staff. It's like a gnarled wood, very knobby at one end. It's got some clear wear where she might put her hands during a fight. She's just standing there kind of proudly, really good posture. When she said something about the sign, she used her staff to point right at it.
Aram, give me an arcana roll.
That's a +0, and I rolled a 7.
That's a fucked up witch.
This is the same result as last time. Oh, all right. So I just kind of cock my head and I'm looking at her, but you know, snakes, blindfold, it's all witch stuff, whatever. Like, and he just kind of dismisses it.
Snakes are a standard witch thing. Head snakes, weird witch thing. Fine. It's still on theme.
I can figure it out later.
So she'll notice that, like, you haven't said anything yet. And that you must be looking at her. She's used to people who she's never met before being a bit weirded out by her whole deal.
Are you sick? You don't seem injured.
I am not.
Is someone you know sick?
No. They're all fine.
Then what can I help you with?
And he would just kind of plunk the axe down, blade first, so the handle's up. And he put his hands on it and just kind of rest his chin on the top of his hands. And he's considering this because he wasn't told what you are, just that you are dangerous. He didn't get all the information he should have gotten. And he looks at you and he's just studying you. And he says,
"This seems rather unfair, but coin is coin. I've come at the request of..."
What's the guy's name? Baron...
We gave him such a really bad... It was like such a...
What was it?
I don't remember.
Baron Von Hampton. So, no. I come at the request...
I refuse.
No, okay.
Choose a different name.
Baron Eugene Heckles. Eugene Heckleson. How about that? Sounds pretty awful.
That's worse.
That's excellent. Perfect. So, Baron Eugene Heckleson. Perhaps you've heard of him. Pretty important in town. You pissed him off. You stole his kid.
There is a gentleman in town. He calls himself the Baron. Absolutely no one is willing to call him that. I'm going with Hacklin, just so that Heckleson is as wrong as it can possibly
Heckleson.
Be.
Yeah, Heckleson. That's what it was. Eugene Heckleson.
That is what you are convinced it is.
Well, fair. I misheard it. I didn't care. Whatever.
I didn't get the story. I don't know what I'm hunting. I don't know who this guy is.
I got a bunch of gold.
I got a bunch of gold and I got an axe. That's an adventure. So, Baron Hacklin, you've had no direct interactions with him. Basically, his wife is getting older. She has tapped out of child rearing at this point, which is a thing that he is not entirely in agreement on. So she's been coming to you just prophylaxis, basic, just getting whatever medicines you can to make sure that she gets her way. And you know, from every time that the wife comes out or she sends one of her daughters out to talk to you about this, this is not something that they have agreed upon. And this is not something that he takes kindly to, but he knows that he can't win that argument.
He's had 4 daughters, and he's that asshole who's just going to keep having kids until there's a boy. That's right. The jerk I'm dealing with.
He's not aiming for children. He's aiming for heirs.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks of them as such.
But despite the fact that for like the last 6 years, his daughters have been running his business because this guy has gout.
Yeah, brilliantly, too.
He made his money because he heard the road was being built before anyone else did. So he was first one in the, just on the ground floor in a situation where you can't fuck it up. Now that running the business takes a business mind,
well, I've made my money and people are running things. It's a well-oiled machine at this point. I can just take a step back. And the daughters are scrambling constantly and really turning it into something worthwhile in this town.
Once a night, he just strolls out, takes a little bow in front of the whole tavern, like, yes, yeah, because he's like the figurehead. They all like, oh, what a nice night. Thank you. Then walks right back in, and the daughters are just like, as they continue with their 10-hour shift, keeping the place running.
And he has sons. They're just not legitimate sons. And he has to have a legitimate son to pass this business off to. You can't see it happen, but when she hears Baron, she immediately rolls her eyes under her blindfold. And then when you say Eugene Heckleson, she knows exactly who you're talking about. And she just harumphs.
I did not steal any of his children. I prevent them from existing.
That sounds like solid witch magic.
You can't be here. So I'm going to give you one chance. Turn around. Walk away. Don't come back.
I'm needed here. And I'm going to stay here until I'm not needed here anymore.
So be it.
Lowers his head and charges.
Okay. Give me an initiative roll.
13 plus 3 is 16.
Yeah, he's going first. I got an 8.
You get your first move.
And he is going to charge. Goring Rush. If you take the dash action on your turn and move at least 20 feet, you can immediately make one melee attack with your horns as a bonus action. So that's what I'm doing, just a charge.
Cool. Do it.
14 plus 6 is 20.
Yeah, that hits.
And that's going to do only 7 points of damage as I slam into you, but I believe there's something else. Okay, that's all I could do. So I just lowered my head and just slammed into you. And are probably a little surprised you didn't go down.
They are sturdy.
Yeah, she feels pretty solid.
Far more than she should be.
This Minotaur, this huge hulking figure, readies this axe, and you're like ready to block that, ready to fend that off. That is a standard fight. And then just head down, runs 40 feet directly into you. You plant your feet, you get your staff sort of in the dirt to hold yourself from moving backwards, and you just take it in the chest. Nikki, it is your turn.
So do you move away from me after you hit me, or are you still standing right next to me?
He's right there because he didn't expect anything else to happen. He thought you were going to go down. So he's basically right in front of you.
So she's going to pull her headband up and look right at you.
If you do that again, I'm going to have to hurt you. And I would rather not.
What do your eyes look like?
Like snake eyes. Green with the slits. They're like a bright greenish yellow. Not human.
So, Nikki, is this turn is just threats?
She's gonna threaten him, and then she is gonna hit him once with the quarterstaff. 20 to hit, modified 20.
Oh yeah.
So I think after you charge her, she's got her staff behind her. She's gonna flip it up and use that real leverage and momentum to just whack you right on the chin.
So you had your head down when you hit her, and you saw the scarf drop past your eye line, and you heard the warning, and then the staff hit you in the chin, and you went straight up pass. You have not seen her face yet.
And she's crazy strong for her size.
That's 8 points of bludgeoning damage right on your chin.
She did more damage with the staff than you just did charging.
Yeah, I haven't been hit like that in a while, and certainly not by someone your size.
And that's at the end of her turn. She'll just stand there ready for you to try his nonsense again.
With the speed of that hit, like how fast it came out and how immediately she fell back into position, you can see the second hit that was locked and loaded and isn't coming. You know that that is held back.
Right.
And it's your turn.
Nikki, do you want to do the thing when his turn starts?
Yes.
Aram, roll me a constitution save when your eye line drops back down and you lock eyes with this creature for the first time.
19 plus 5 is 24.
You're fine.
You're all right.
What do I feel, though?
You look into her eyes and you see the green. And that little sort of amber to it immediately just surges out. It pulses like energy and her eyes go bright yellow for a half moment. And you feel arthritis. You feel every joint stop being mobile, stop being lubricated like it's granite instead of bone.
Let me tell you, I can visualize that rather well.
I know you can.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
I'm coming for your references. You know, I want you to understand what I'm saying.
You are digging into my personal fears, and I appreciate it.
Let me know if that's, like, too hard a button.
No, it's fine. I'm in. I'm terrified, but I'm in.
Cool. Good. Then it's one of those things that you feel it, and you feel it grab, and you immediately break eye contact because you look down at your arms. Like, you feel it try to grab your elbows, and then you're just like, what the fuck? And it stops. It lets up. Make another Arcana roll.
Okay.
Make it at advantage now.
The I rolled a natural 1 and a 7.
She's a powerful witch.
She's a really strong witch. I've never seen such a powerful witch.
Normally they have to cast these spells. She just fucking eye-beamed your arms.
God, she's got to have at least 3 meta magic feats to even pull that off.
Oh my God.
You have no fucking idea what's going on here.
Her staff's a giant magic wand.
Yeah, it could be.
Only thing that makes sense.
Anything could be happening here.
She's a secret dragon.
All these thoughts are going through his head. So for the first time, he tenses a bit. He's worried and he decides not to hold back this round.
Make your attacks.
Are you going to look at her?
He is going to look at you because he still doesn't understand what's happening.
He hasn't figured out what's going on.
Yeah.
That's true.
So he's going to make 2 attacks against you, and then he's going to use his action surge to make a 3rd one.
Aram, we have this conversation every time you play a fighter. When you use action surge, you get to take another action, and if you attack, then you get your full attack action.
Your eyes shifted, his eyes have now shifted, and just a blast of hot air comes out of his nostrils as he just starts coming in with that axe. He's going to roll 4 attacks. First one, 8 plus 7 is 15.
Just hits.
Natural 1 on the second one.
You go in, make that first swing, and when you do, there's a moment of pride, and you lock eyes with her again, and there's a moment where it seizes mid-swing.
Yeah.
You might be putting some things together, but you aren't getting another check on this one this turn.
18 plus 7 is 25, which hits. And 17 plus 7 is 24, that hits. So, 3 hits. First one is 10 plus 4 is 14. Second one is 9, so 23. And the last one is 8, so that is 31 points of damage.
There's a little bit of it where it's not even necessarily that he's moving that quickly. It's he knows how to throw the weight around. So when he hits you, you will stumble back. And then he moves to meet where he knows you're going to wind up. There is finesse to this that doesn't seem reasonable for someone of this size.
And you haven't gone down. And now he's very worried.
Anything you want to do with the bonus action, Aram?
With the bonus action then, I think I do. I think I have a bonus action thing I can do. Oh yeah, I can shove her. So I can always shove someone. So that's what I'll do just because it's fun. Mm-hmm. With that last hit, I try and kind of, you know, shove you backwards. Hammering horns. After you hit a creature with a melee attack as part of the attack action, you can immediately use a bonus action to attempt to push the target within 5 feet of you, no more than 1 size larger than you. It must succeed on a strength saving throw, DC 14, or be pushed 10 feet away.
She's pushed 10 feet away.
Okay, so the very last hit, it's like he basically just holds the axe in his hands and slams both fists into you and just rocks you. But you do that kind of cool anime thing where you just slide backwards and then stop right there.
It's as if she weighs more than she should.
Yeah.
there's a line deeper than it should be, and it's a little bit terrifying.
As if you were made of granite.
Yeah, as if she's made of stone.
You remember that feeling of stone bones, and it just keeps echoing in your head.
Right, I should know something, but I haven't made the connection
yet. Something, yeah.
Yep.
So she's not even down half. Like, she's still pretty up.
She's starting to look a little bit ruffled.
Yeah. You've ruffled some feathers. You ruffled some scales.
Ruffled some scales.
And he would just, like, look at you after he shoved you 10 feet, hit you with the axe 3 times, and just...
What are you?
Your worst nightmare. She's going to.
Yes. You got a 10-foot run up.
Yep, she's going to run up and hit you twice with her her quarterstaff, so one on each end. She's going to also try to attack you with the snake hair.
My AC is 16.
Plus 5 to hits all around.
11 plus 5, so that's a 16. And then, oh, that's a 2. And then the snake hair is a nat 20.
Oh, they're so pissed.
Oh, that's not the thing you want to crit.
They're so protective. No, they are so protective of you, and they're so mad right now.
I think, and that's why she misses on the second one, is that she whacks you with the first one, and that is going to do 4 points of bludgeoning damage. When she tries to hit you with the second side, she whiffs. But as that comes down, her head kind of tilts towards you and the snakes go out and snap at you. And they get you 5 points of piercing damage. So that's just them chomping on you. There's 5 of them. 6, 11, 12, 13, 26 points of poison damage.
Okay. Wow.
This lady... hurts your outsides plenty. The biting, the hitting, the chin smacks, not pleasant. The things she does to your insides. First there was the stone bones. Now it feels like your veins are on fire. Acid instead of blood. Magnificently painful. And she is down just under your reach. She keeps getting in and creating these little openings and staying too close for you to just grab her head and crush it.
Too fast and too strong.
Really not something you were waiting on.
He lets out a bellowish roar. Just this thundering horn-like roar. And he... uses his bonus action to cast Second Wind. Well, not to cast Second Wind, but to invoke a Second Wind. To whatever the hell a fighter does to make things happen.
To Second Winded thing.
Yeah, right. So that's 1d10 plus 7 hit points back. I rolled a 1, so that gives me 8 hit points back.
It's better than nothing.
And then he goes to swing, but his axe swings low because he's trying to trip you.
Okay, so then you look at her, huh?
Yeah, totally. I'll look right at her.
Hey, Nikki, do you want to do the thing?
Yeah, I do the thing. She does the thing. She's pissed.
Make a constitution save.
Constitution save.
You rear back, and when you go to swing, roll your save.
16 plus 5 is 21.
All right. You're doing all right. You want to make your check again, or are you even thinking?
You know what? At this point, I think he's so... Well, you know, I'll do the check every time because it's like there's something in his brain. There's
it's
like
just rattling.
Yeah.
This is the story that your mother told you at night to get you to stay in bed.
At this point, you have more than enough to like put it together. It's just you gotta, I think, a 13. It's like not a common story, but it's a story.
I rolled a 7 and a 5.
Fuck off. Fardian, this is... You've rolled for this 5 times.
I know, he just doesn't know. All the clues.
This Eugene Hacklin, Heckelson really screwed me over. This witch bites harder than I thought she would.
She's got a little badge that says her name and below it it says local helpful Medusa, and he's still not figuring it out.
Not putting it together.
There's like a snake motif around her door.
The trouble you run into is that, yes, this is one of the stories that your mom told you when she was trying to get you to stay in bed, and it's one that you fell asleep halfway through every fucking time.
It was a long story.
If you ask your sibling, she knows. She knows the story.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
She was interested.
She would slap you right now.
That's why she took levels in wizard and you took levels in fighter.
Yep.
Make your attack.
So he swings with his axe to trip you. That is going to be... That is a natural 20. Good time for that.
There you go.
So first the damage. The damage is going to be a total of 19. And then you have to make a saving throw DC 14 to not trip.
You're using the Battlemaster thing?
Correct.
Read over that again, because you get to roll your superiority die and add it to your damage. So you get to add 2d8 as well.
Are you sure about that?
Yes, that is how Battlemasters work.
Trip attack. When you hit with a weapon attack, you can expend one superiority dice to add to the total of the damage roll. And that if the target is large or small, you must make a strength check DC 14. You're absolutely right.
Basically, any of these attacks, the superiority die adds to damage, and also for spending it, you get to invoke that effect.
Oh, that's only going to be 3, so it's not much more.
Plus, it's 6 more points of damage because it is part of the crit. Works the same as the...
No, that is both die. It is 3.
Okay.
A 2 and a 1.
Fair enough. I was going to say, it works the same as a paladin smite. You still get to... But no, Aram rolls like trash.
And I failed my roll, by the way.
After he takes your legs out, he's got the axe high. He looks straight down and just brings the axe straight down. 18 plus 7 is 25.
Roll again to check if it's a second crit, because technically she is prone now.
Okay, the second one is...
I have to be mean to you too, because it's fairness. I don't want to do it.
Second one is a 3. And that's 11 points of damage. The whole ground shakes.
Yeah, there's more resistance than you expect.
You see his eyes just go wide.
This is the point where you get full confirmation that something is fucked.
Yeah.
Because you bring the axe down on her sternum and you push her into the dirt. You don't cut her.
That's not good.
Nikki.
Something's off.
This witch is harder than usual.
She must have cast mage armor.
Or stone skin or something.
I assume that you pull the axe back up after you hit her.
It probably could have bounced off.
Yeah, basically. You're like, wait a second, what's happening here? Is this a hammer or an axe?
Double check.
After that happens, she does one of those like kick-ups. So she's back on her feet, like almost imperceptibly fast. And she's going to now hit you, try to hit you again twice, and then with the snakes again. So that first one, nat 1. And that second one is a 4. And then the other one for the snakes is a 16 hit.
Snakes got me.
That's the whole trick, is like you are batting away at him and he's attacking, but you just start going like, no, you know what? The staff is chip damage, relatively speaking. And you just use it to keep his arms wide and get right under him. This isn't even leaning in. This is just you get under his chin and the snakes start going into the neck and at the top of the armor.
One bites me in the snout.
Oh! Doesn't even bite you, just pulls on the ring.
So the bites do 5 points of piercing damage again, but then the poison damage is 16 points of damage.
You see his shoulders sag. You hear his breath get raspy and deep, and you see his eyes begin to glaze. He's just hanging on to consciousness.
And she looks at you and she says,
are you done yet?
And he would like, oh, he's like, he's... Puts the axe down, pulls himself back up to his height. Look, just give him back his kid.
I didn't take his fucking kid.
Prove it.
How do you prove that I didn't take a child?
Let me look around. His neck is burning. His shoulder's burning.
You look him up and down and... Nikki, roll me a medicine check.
18.
Aram, how many hit points do you currently have?
4.
If you breathe hard enough, he will die. This is not a threat. This isn't like a weird ploy to get one last shot in. If he steps wrong leaving your house, he'll die on the road.
She looks at him and she goes,
are you sick?
He would touch his neck and he'd pull back like blood and probably some pus, right? And he would, again, kind of a little dizzy. He's still poisoned.
You did something to me.
I mean, they did. And she points at her hair.
And he would nod and try and stand up again.
I just am here for the child.
She can see that you see how messed up you are right now.
Yeah.
Her gaze is still down, but she's still in a very proud posture. And she kind of like does a like neck crack because you rocked her a little bit. This is the hardest fight she's gotten into in a very long time. And she's just going to like pat you on your giant arm and say, all right, come on, big guy. And takes you to home/workspace.
This entire space screams witch. You're clearly right that this is a witch.
But it's beautiful, right?
Yeah, it's a lovely witch. This might be one of the nice cookies witches, not like the horrible murder witches.
And there's a cat that's like walking around on the top shelves and
kind of brushes against a horn, right?
It steps on your head to go across the doorway. Yeah.
There's like flowers and places to like entertain and have people over. There's maybe some hand-drawn pictures from the kids who you helped save in town. And he's just taking it all in. And he just slides the axe back onto his back, and he's just kind of looking around, and he's very confused.
Seeing as to how big you are, she's not going to let you go sit on the bed. She's afraid you'll break it. But sure. She has this, like, stone stool in her next to it, so she have a seat.
Okay, and he very cautiously, like, gets, because he's very aware of his horns, and there's a lot of ivy and stuff, and he isn't, even though he just attacked you several times, he doesn't want to mess up your house. He's polite. So he goes and sits down, and when he sits down, you just see him. It was every bit of strength just to get to that stone stool and put his ass down on it, and you just see him slump.
I think she walks over, she opens this canister, and what you smell is like this very earthy medicine smell, kind of like a eucalyptus and bark kind of smell. And it's got definitely has honey in it. And she starts boiling some water and then makes you a tea and hands it over. And this is like her version of like a healing potion.
Yeah.
Hands you the tea and she's like, this is going to hurt. And then she takes some hot water and on a rag and starts cleaning your bites.
I'm going to give you basically a healer's kit roll. So it'll be wisdom plus proficiency. So it's going to be +4 total. And what we're going to go with is we'll basically give you a D4 per, let's say, 4 points above 10. So you get a 10, okay. You'll heal him for a D4, 2D4 at 14, 18 up. You get the idea. You can count.
Yeah, it's a 19 total then.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, so Aram, you can heal 3D4 hit points.
Cool. Nikki, do you want to roll that?
Yeah, you know she rolls better than you, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is 9 points of healing.
Nice. Okay.
Actually, as you drink this tea, yeah. And like cleaning out your cuts.
With this little teeny teacup with his giant hands.
Now, I understand that you've been misled and possibly even lied to. This man who sent you, he and I, we're not enemies. To say we were enemies would imply that he and I are on the same level, and we're not. His wife is in her upper years. And no longer wants to have children. He has 4 daughters that are running his business for him. And that's not good enough because he wants a legitimate son.
And his eyes go wide because he's got 3 sisters and he was the youngest and his dad was an asshole. He knows this story well. His sisters basically raised him. And so he just snorts and lowers his head and just shakes it. Sadly, and he looks back up at you with determination.
When I regain my strength, I have some gold to return.
Keep your gold. You've earned it.
Well, At the very least, I have a message to send back to this gentleman, this so-called Baron. Care to join me?
Yes, I will come with you. I normally don't go into town, but I feel like this situation calls for a house visit.
I'd imagine we spend the next couple days. I'm resting up. You heal me, right? The cat's taking a liking to me. I've got maybe a little flower crown now. Like I've I got little ribbons on, you know, on the ends of my horns. I'm totally into it.
Are you making these things? Because like, yes, a little bit cottage core. Don't get me wrong, but also like just a professional.
The supplies are there. Because, like, okay, so she's delivered a lot of babies, and, you know, people bring her gifts.
There's the box for kids to keep themselves busy while they're waiting right. to be seen.
Yeah.
And his sisters used to do this all the time, put flowers in his horns and tie ribbons to him.
The cat now has a little flower crown.
Yeah, exactly. And so he feels at home here. He feels like he's just with one of his older sisters again.
And she's explained who she is and what she is and why she's the way that she is. And that, you know, she's been running from town to town for her whole life and that she's been here the longest and she likes it here.
And by the end of day two, you stop trying to look at her eyeballs.
Right. It's huge. Do you tell me what you are?
She tells you immediately. Okay. Like as soon as you've calmed down.
That moment we cut away from that last conversation was like, also, I'm a Medusa. Please stop looking at my eyes.
If a bull could go white, a bull just went white because he did not. He's like, holy crap. He did not realize how close to death he got.
Especially the moment after that, because your eyes go really, really wide and then you immediately shut them completely.
Yeah, right.
Fuck.
And she's got her blindfold on. Like, this is all unnecessary.
And then after a couple days, I'm fully rested and healed. And I think one morning, as he's helping you bring in some things from the garden or maybe tearing up a stump, right? Mm-hmm. He turns back and he's like,
I'm ready. Let's finish this.
Let's go do the town a favor.
You come in later at night. People are starting to shut down, you know, the lights are kind of coming out. There's a handful of like just sort of torches that are left nearer to the middle of the road, you know, the sort of thing where we can leave these. They'll peter out over the course of the night and it'll just give people something to move by in case they're trying to get between buildings.
Safety lights. Yeah.
Yeah. Less safety and more just seeing stuff lights. You know, the last kids are still out playing. And then all of a sudden, there's the little bit of commotion. Kids telling their parents, like, look, there's a cowman and the nice lady. Get inside.
Little tumbleweed rolls down.
And a path is basically cleared for you. There are some people who, like, still are doing their work and they are fucking wide of this. There are parents watching from, like, houses as you go up to the largest building in town. There is a gate, there's a small garden, and then there's this huge, like, three-story house.
Not a gate for long. She rams that gate open. Wham! Just
unnecessary, just geometrically, but sure.
He's going to slam every door open until he gets to a room, and then he's going to step to the side and very graciously open it for you.
There is all that noise when you slam the thing open, and immediately, like, someone is at the door. It's clearly some sort of butler or something, sees what is going on with you and is terrified. Then he looks past, and he sees the Medusa, and there's just a moment of, the fuck is going on here?
She does not make house calls.
She does not.
One of the daughters comes down, sees what's going on, and just goes, you're done for the night. Go. And immediately he runs. She pulls the door open the rest of the way and goes, looks over the somewhat still bandaged Minotaur, looks down at you and goes, I'm so sorry.
She would look at the daughter and just be like, it's not your fault, dear. Where is he?
And she steps off to the side. We're going to fade out there. In the morning, Everyone starts going out about their business. There is a little, like, pool in the middle of town. They try to keep it clean, but we haven't quite gotten, like, irrigation or anything down, like, for this. There aren't pipes, so it's just something that gets cleaned out every now and then. And in the middle of it is a statue. A statue of the first baron of town, Edmund Hackland, who looks fundamentally terrified.
Thank you for joining us for The Medusa. For more information about us, notes for each episode, and ways you can help support the show, head over to killeverymonster.com.
If any of the ideas we've discussed on the show have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Twitter at KEM Podcast. You'll find me at DJ Malenfant and Aram at Aram Vardian.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus episodes, print-ready maps, our new audio DMs notes, and my character sheets for each encounter, head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster. You can also listen to ad-free episodes and bonus content by subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the editing. Our guest was Nikki. You can find her on Twitter at HalflingNikki or TikTok and Instagram at the same name. And if you are anything like me and all of that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster.